February 26, 1985. Wally World, our intelligence compound at Pomerola Air Base, tasked us with a mission requiring us to fly two civilian pilots to one of the largest Contra villages on the Honduran side of the Nicaraguan-Honduras border. The names of our passengers, as noted in Section 19 of the Department of Defense flight plan filed with base operations prior to the departure from Pomerola, were Bill Cooper and Buzz Sawyer. We departed at 1630 Z. Z is abbreviation for Greenwich Mean Time. During the flight, Mr. Cooper told us that they worked for Corporate Air Services, a CIA proprietary based out of Ilopango Air Base in El Salvador. They were meeting with Contra leaders to coordinate an airdrop of arms and ammunition to various Contra camps. We arrived at El Paraiso, Honduras without incident. The meeting between the pilots and Contra leaders lasted just over an hour. At the termination of the meeting, we were given a white cooler marked vaccine and instructed to deliver the cooler to a U.S. Air Force C-130 at La Mesa Airport. Upon arrival at La Mesa Airport in San Pedro Sula, Honduras, the cooler was dropped by two of our crew members. It weighed in excess of 200 pounds. The seal broke on the cooler. I picked up some aviation tape, commonly called 100 mile an hour tape, to reseal the vaccine cooler. I gave the crew leave to get lunch ordered. I stayed to refuel the helicopter and reseal the cooler. Mr. Cooper and Sawyer went to eat and wait for their flight back to El Salvador. When I removed the torn tape from the cooler, I saw the contents consisted of a number of bags of white, seemingly powdery substance. There was over 100 bags of what appeared to be cocaine. I resealed the cooler and continued refueling the aircraft. We returned to Pomerola Air Base. Upon our return, I called Washington Switch via landline and advised Mr. North regarding my discovery of the cocaine. He told me that it was one of the trophies of war. The Sandinistas are manufacturing cocaine and selling it to fund the military. He further stated that the cocaine was bound for world courts as evidence. I was reminded of the white coolers I had been asked to deliver to Arkansas on several occasions the year prior. I was a special ops pilot at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. In 1983 and 1984, we would routinely receive requests from a medevac unit at Fort Campbell to deliver white coolers marked medical supplies to Little Rock Air Force Base, and, on two occasions, to an airport west of Little Rock in Mena, Arkansas. Further investigation on my part clarified some outstanding questions I had. The medevac unit at Fort Campbell, the 324th Med Battalion, was supporting unit for Task Force 160, a special operations unit under the control of the CIA. Flight crews of the 324th Medical Battalion rotated in and out of Honduras on four-month tours. During my flight to Arkansas, I was met by a man introducing himself as Dr. Dan Lassiter. Dr. Lassiter was never alone. He was usually accompanied by a plainclothes policeman who produced a badge and ID. His name was Raymond Young. I was introduced to him and found that his nickname was Buddy. Mr. Young would later show up in Honduras posing as a member of the Arkansas National Guard. That's on the flight plan dated 16 March 1985. On one occasion in the fall of 1983, I was tasked with delivering two such coolers to Little Rock Airport. The coolers, marked medical supplies, were to be delivered to Dr. Dan Lassiter only. My instructions were to wait for Dr. Lassiter. If he was not at the airport when we arrived, wait. Prior to takeoff, I helped our crew chief secure the cargo in the rear of the aircraft. I noticed that although both coolers were identical in size, one cooler was significantly heavier than the other. I shook the lighter cooler, trying to guess its contents, but it was so tightly packed that nothing rattled. I recall thinking that it must have been organs or something packing tightly in dry ice. So I opened the cooler to check its contents. After thoroughly examining the contents, my curiosity was satisfied and I closed and resealed the cooler with military green 100 mile an hour tape. They had originally been sealed with gray air conditioning duct tape. I resecured the cargo and we departed for Little Rock. We arrived late in the night, about 10:30 p.m. Dr. Lassiter was not waiting for us, so we began our post-flight of the aircraft and flight planning for our next leg to Houston's Hobby Airport. About 12:15 a.m., a limousine followed by a van and an unmarked law enforcement vehicle arrived at the FBO. Dr. Lassiter was the first out of the limo. I recognized him from a previous flight. He was followed by two others. Dr. Lassiter introduced himself to me, apparently not realizing we had met before. He had asked if we were the aircraft with the donor organs. I told him that we had the coolers and pointed at them in the rear of the aircraft. Doug, our crew chief, helped Lassiter's limo driver with the coolers. The heavy cooler went into the limo and the light cooler was loaded into the van. Dr. Lassiter introduced me to the two gentlemen with him. First, we were introduced to the governor of Arkansas, Governor William J. Clinton. Then his security chief, Raymond Buddy Young. At this point, Mr. Young recognized me and stated so. I was then introduced to a third man standing at the limo. We were invited to stay the night and accepted. After all, I thought, they may want to talk to me after they find the note I left in the lighter cooler. After returning to Fort Campbell on Friday, I called my mentor, Bill Colby, and told him of the delivery and my discovery. I told him that when I opened the cooler, which was ultimately taken by Governor Clinton, it contained several kilos of off-white powdery substance and lots of money. The coolers which were delivered to Arkansas were identical to the one I just discovered at La Mesa Airport in Honduras, containing cocaine. I decided that I had best begin documenting our cargo for the flight crew's safety. I went to operations and noted the cocaine on the back of the flight plan. March 1, 1985. Two white coolers marked medical supplies were delivered to dust off medevac operations. Major Rodriguez advised us to deliver the coolers to him in Tela, Honduras. I opened the coolers and checked the contents. They were both filled with about 100 kilos of cocaine. We delivered the coolers as ordered to Major Rodriguez. He was waiting in front of an old DC-3 when we returned to Pomerola Air Base. March 2, 1985. I was advised by Major Rodriguez that the company had arranged for an unusually high concentration of chlorine in the water supply of a tactical communications site called Skywatch. The CIA was unable to obtain the satellite operations frequencies from the military-controlled site. This was not unusual. The Department of Defense and the CIA never have developed a level of trust adequate to share secret information between agencies. I was one of several U.S. military officers recruited by the company to spy on our military for the CIA. This small group of military officers reported directly to Director of the CIA. I reported to William Colby initially, then George H.W. Bush. My mission was to obtain those frequencies while the doctor was tending to the ill soldiers. While the physician's assistant and medic tended to the stomach-cramped and diarrhea-ridden American servicemen, I went into the communications van and copied the frequencies. When we returned to Pomerola, we experienced engine failure and were forced to auto-rotate from 8,500 feet. The tail boom of the helicopter cracked and we crash-landed. Later in the afternoon, I gained access to a secure line. I called Washington Switch and passed the frequencies to Don Gregg, as I was instructed. Mr. Gregg, Vice President George Bush's National Security Advisor, asked me to pass them to Claire George. Before having my call transferred to Mr. George, I told Mr. Gregg of my discovery concerning the cocaine in the large white coolers. I also told him about Major Rodriguez's explanation. Mr. Gregg confirmed that the coolers were bound for the world courts as evidence against the Sandinistas. I was then transferred to Langley and passed the frequencies to Mr. George. He thanked me and advised me that he would pass them to Dewey, who was Dewey Claridge of the CIA. See the letter dated 1993 from the security section of the Israeli embassy. I terminated the call and went to base operations. I noted the info on the back of the flight plan. I put additional notes on the mission brief. The supporting maintenance officer for the U.S. Army Aviation Element at Pomerola Air Base advised me during our post-crash investigation that the aircraft had experienced serious mechanical problems in flight. No shit. During maintenance, the turbine was fitted with the wrong main seals, causing the combustion chamber to crack on the turbine, ending in engine failure. Additionally, the main rotor blades had been adjusted so that when entering auto-rotation, the main rotor pitch would be in a negative position. This meant that instead of being driven by the relative wind and providing sufficient RPMs to land safely through auto-rotation, the main rotor blades were set to slow to the point of stalling, thus causing no lift and a fatal crash. I discovered the negative pitch in time to compensate and land with minimal damage to the aircraft and crew and me. Someone didn't want us alive.